Chapter 6. Two mornings later, Jamie Johnson is in my driveway, stretching his arms overhead in the dawn twilight. He must live nearby, since I don't see a car. I nod hello before putting Sema down and whispering at my prayer tree. Joining him in the driveway, I take in an eyeful of my new soup buddy. The guy is all lean muscles and ligaments stretched over bones. He has no body fat whatsoever. We are the same height, but I outweigh him by a good 30 pounds. Even more on puffy days. As I size Jamie up, I imagine him doing the same to me. Tall, sturdy chick, ginormous ass, ghostly white skin, wide mouth, big nose, and, what cruel irony, small tits. I fight an urge to shout back that I'm powerful on defense, I'm smart, and I don't ever give up. He interrupts my internal dialogue. You ever run with your brother? Sometimes, I say, beginning my side stretches. He and his friends go a lot faster than my normal pace. I leave out the part about Levi's impatience with my warm-up routine. You're really close to your brother. Jamie squats and stretches one leg to the side. I suppose. Sometimes he's a pain. I stare at the taut gracilis muscle of his inner thigh, how it forms a direct line into his loose shorts. I force myself to reestablish eye contact. Do you have any siblings? No siblings, just my uncle. My parents divorced when I was little. They aren't into hockey. Uncle Ron's always helped pay for my gear and travel teams. When he got a teaching job here, I took him up on his offer to do my senior year in the Sioux. He looks pleased getting the town nickname right. I catch myself mirroring his proud smile as I go through a quick version of my warm-up. Jamie matches his stretches to mine. Ready, buddy? I jut my chin and lips toward the road. Yes, Ambassador. The smile hasn't left his face. I take my normal route through campus. Hey, look, Jamie says when we pass the new dorm. It's got your last name on it. Yep, he laughs. That's all you got to say? Yep, I flash my cheesiest smile. When we reach the overlook behind the student union, I stop. Hold up, I say. Jamie walks back a few steps to stand next to me. Over there, a few miles away, is Lake Superior. I point to the west before following the river. It feeds the St. Mary's River, which is the international border with Canada. The city on the other side is also called Sault Ste. Marie, but it's a lot bigger than our town. I end with another game show hostess flourish. Something about Jamie makes me want to show off. The river curves around the east end of town, and those pretty hills are part of Sugar Island. That's where my dad's family is from. Mine and Levi's, I mean. Wow, it's beautiful. The awe in his voice makes me feel the same as when I ace a quiz. Ready? I ask, easing back into our pace. We follow the road from the bluff to the river a half mile away. Jamie watches a freighter moving slowly and quietly into the nearest lock. As he observes the long ship, I sneak a look at his profile, the side of his face that isn't scarred. The freighter blasts its horn 50 feet from us. Startled, Jamie swears loudly. I laugh. I'm gonna need my ambassador to explain all this, he says. Remember when I pointed to Lake Superior? 5 minutes ago, he says dryly. Yes, smart ass. So, ships pass by on their way to or from the other Great Lakes to reach Lake Superior, which is 20-something feet higher than everything downriver. There used to be rapids here. It was a major gathering spot for the Anishinaabe, with fishing villages on both sides of the river and on Sugar Island. The government took over the area and cut through the rapids to build the Sioux Locks, which work like a water elevator to raise or lower the ships. Jamie's eyes are on me instead of the freighter across the street. What happened to all the Anishinaabe people in their villages? I raise an eyebrow. I'm not sure if Jamie knows what a big question he's asked. Tourists, like Jamie, never think about the ones who got pushed aside for progress. I don't know if he really wants to know my tribe's history, or how I'd even begin to tell him. That's a story for another time, I say. Now, it's your turn to talk. Tell me about you. That's a story for another time, he says, grinning. I have more questions. I smile back. How did I get stuck with the most curious one of yous? What's the deal with yous? Jamie asks. I laugh. That's the most important question. Yous is the Youper version of y'all. And Youper means a person from the UP, or Upper Peninsula. Wow, I got the smart buddy. I point for us to take the next turn. We fall easily into a comfortable silence that lasts for a few miles. When we turn by the Dairy Queen, he gestures toward a small house. That's where my uncle and I live, he says, continuing to run beside me. Oh, one more question. When people say Anishinaabe, do they mean native or Ojibwe? Anishinaabe means the original people, indigenous, Nish, Nishnab, Shinab. Mostly we're referring to Ojibwe, Odawa, and Potawatomi tribes from the Great Lakes area. Ojibwe language is called Anishinaabe Mo'in, or Ojibwe Mo'in. Levi calls it Ojibberish. I roll my eyes. If you hang with him long enough, he'll give you a Nish nickname. Jamie quickly looks my way. Levi said to ask you how to say Scarface in the language. We burst into laughter at the same time. I inhale some spit and have to stop for a coughing fit. Once we catch our breath, I motion toward Evercare, surprised at how quickly the miles flew by with Jamie. I end my run at that nursing home. My grandmother's there. She had a stroke. I'm sorry, he says. That's a lot to deal with after losing your uncle, too. How are you coping, Donis? The directness startles me. Something about the way he asks makes me wonder if he might be familiar with loss, too. Other than Lily, no one really asks how I'm doing. People ask about Mom, or what will happen with the big house. It's odd to have the person who has known me the least amount of time ask how I'm doing, and in such a genuine way. It's okay, Jamie says as I fumble for words. Tell me when you're ready. By the time we reach the parking lot, I still have no answer. I look over at Jamie. His skin glistens like a shiny penny, smooth and new. His hair is damp with sweat, the curls going in every direction. My thoughts about Jamie go in every direction as well. Regular world needs some hockey world rules, I decide. Miigwech for the run, buddy, I say. Tomorrow, it's your turn. You can tell me about your last hockey team, your last school, your uncle, and your girlfriend, hey? Jamie smiles, gives a thumbs up, and jogs away. I call Lily while walking home from Evercare. After I fill her in on my run with Jamie, she and I try guessing what he might reveal about his girlfriend. Car accident, Lily declares. They bonded over their scars. Nah, Auntie says his scar is too straight to be accidental. Her ex-boyfriend cut Jamie in a jealous rage, she says. Holy, not every relationship is a drama shit show, I say. Well, all the ones I seen are. We are silent for half a block. I hear Granny's dog barking on the other end. Lily doesn't say much about her mom or her life before coming to live with Granny June, but sometimes she'll take Mom's side when I gripe about the overprotective stuff. Lily finally says, okay, Fancy Nancy Drew, what's your hypotenuse? The smile in her voice is contagious. My hypothesis is that they lost their virginity together, I say, breaking into a wide grin. By the way, a hypotenuse is the long side of a right triangle. Whatever, she says as she heads off. Later, Gator. After a while, Crocodilus Nilotagus. Geek. It rains hard the next morning, so I text an alternate plan to Jamie before dawn. He swings by in a black pickup truck, and we go to the fitness center at Shimakwa. I don't like running indoors, but it's better than going through the day feeling like something's off. We hop on our treadmills, and a minute in, I notice that Jamie's settings are the same as mine. You know, you don't have to keep pace with me, I say. That's the upside of running on a treadmill. Go as fast as you want. Nah, it's good. I still have practice and conditioning with the team later, Jamie says. I shrug and keep running, but secretly, I'm pleased. It takes 2 miles for me to find my rhythm. That's the downside of a treadmill. right up there with feeling like a hamster on a wheel. "You're quiet today," Jamie says. "Everything okay?" "I was waiting for you to talk. Remember? It's your turn." "Ah, that's right," he says. "Well, what do you want to know?" "I want to know everything. My prayer this morning, though, was for mana dedendo moin. Respect. Respect for relationships. My ambassador thing with Jamie and his relationship with his girlfriend. I won't be a wannabe anglerfish trying to latch on to a guy who is already taken." "Whatever you want to tell me, buddy." "Well, ambassador, I was born on a dark and stormy night." I look over to see his full smile tugging the bottom of his scar. "I don't like talking about myself, I guess," Jamie says. "My dad's Cherokee. Him and my mom got divorced when I was little. She and I moved around a lot. He got a new family. Uncle Ron checked on me more than my dad. I played hockey all over. That's it." Jamie's background is kind of like mine. Native dad, parents not together, and an uncle who stepped in because his own dad wasn't around anymore. Maybe that explains why it feels easy to be around him. "And you figure skate," I say. "You left that part out." "How do you know that?" I feel Jamie eyeballing me. "I don't know. The way you lifted Pauline the other day." I shrug again and I feel a painful twinge in my shoulder. "My grandmother, the one I called Grand Mary, she made me do figure skating for a few years. I hated it, but it was the only way she let me play hockey." "What about your mom? Didn't she have a say?" "You never knew Grand Mary. She was like Eta Carini, and my mom and I were like wobbly planets sucked into her gravitational pull." "Eta Carini?" Jamie asks. "The largest star in the galaxy," I say quietly. Something sinks inside me as I realize I use the past tense about someone who is still alive. I increase my pace setting. Jamie seems to sense the shift and cranks up his setting too, quietly keeping pace. We go silent for the rest of the run. On the drive home, I ask Jamie to drop me off at Evercare. "But it's still coming down," he gestures at the frantic wiper blades. I won't melt." I open the truck door and steel myself for the sprint to the building. I glance over to him. "Thanks for the run and the ride, buddy." "You're welcome, Ambassador." I kiss Grand Mary before applying her red lipstick. Mom hasn't arrived yet, so I retrieve the Blink notebook from the top shelf in the small closet. Settling into the chair beside her bed, I talk to my grandmother, pausing to make tally marks in the two columns. Light bulb on and light bulb off. She seems tired today. I stay only for the 15-minute data collection session. When I leave, Jamie's pickup truck is still in the parking lot. "You didn't need to wait," I say, climbing in, surprised yet grateful. "Eh," he says, mimicking me. "I wanted to." As Jamie pulls into my driveway, I remember the girlfriend. She needs to be real to me. "You didn't say anything about your last town or team or your girlfriend." "My girlfriend's name is Jennifer." "Jen," he says. I try to imagine her, but all I see is a cool girl with long, shiny hair and a long side bang over her left eye like the late singer Aaliyah. "We've been together for 3 years. Her dad's military, so she moves all the time, too." I should feel happy for Jamie, having a girlfriend who understands being the new kid in school. It's just nice to have something solid no matter how much everything else changes. Know what I mean? I nod, though I don't know what Jamie means. Ever since Uncle David died, nothing's felt solid. Even before he went missing, my uncle began acting strange, distant. We found out about his relapse afterward. The last time my life felt solid was... Christmas? "Well, I'll see you tomorrow morning. And Jamie?" "Jimmy Gwitch. Big thank you." I say it to cover everything. The ride and telling me stuff about himself, even though he has difficulty sharing details about his life. "You're welcome, Donis." I don't understand why I'm jealous of a girl who can relate to the closed-off parts of Jamie. By Friday, the line between hockey world and regular world has blurred as if drawn in charcoal pencil that Jamie smudges a little more with each morning we run together. I wake up, brush my teeth, pull my hair into a thick ponytail, throw on running clothes, and grab a pinch of Sema from Grandma Pearl's birch bark basket at the entry table. Jamie is always in my driveway when I whisper my morning prayer. Then we do our warm-up and hit the road. When we pass the row of gift shops across from the Sioux Locks, I smile at a memory. Levi sold sweetgrass to tourists here when he was little, I say. What's sweetgrass? It's one of our traditional medicines that smells really good, like a mellow, sweet spice. In Ojibwe, it's called wingashk, and in science, it's called hyroclo odoretta. There'll be some for sale at the tribe's powwow this weekend. I've never been to a powwow. Are you going tomorrow? Can you show me around? Sure, I say, surprised at his eagerness. I remind myself that he hasn't grown up around his tribe like I have. How about an ambassador-guided powwow experience? That'd be fantastic, he says with a grin. I have to force myself not to grin back. So, Levi sold sweetgrass to tourists? Yep, he and our friend Travis picked and braided it. Levi told people he was descended from a powerful chief and a medicine woman. He claimed that his sweetgrass was magical. You know, that hokey stuff tourists like to believe. I roll my eyes. That sounds like Levi, Jamie laughs. Natural businessman. I'm sure Stormy was in on it too. Those two are trouble. Stormy Noden is Levi's best friend since their tribal Head Start preschool days. He made the team, along with Jamie, after bombing at Soup's tryouts last year. True, Stormy's mom was in jail at the time for fighting some Zaganosh guy at a bar downtown, but hockey doesn't give a rat's ass about your personal problems. Nah, Stormy's dad didn't want him collecting medicines with people outside the family. His dad is kind of scary. Like, it's not just Zaganosh that he doesn't want to be around. Even some tribal members don't make the cut with Mr. Noden. They only did it for a couple of summers, though. Then the casino opened and per capita started. I heard some guys on the team talking about it. Tribal members get money from the casino? That's kind of crazy. Jamie shakes his head in disbelief. I stiffen. It's no different than Walmart or Ford paying dividends to shareholders. I keep my voice smooth while awaiting Jamie's reaction, hoping he won't reveal himself to be a jerk. Wow, I never thought of it that way, he says. I feel my shoulders relax. Can I ask how much? Or is that rude? It's okay, I say. I've heard Levi blab that adult members get $36,000 a year. Not sure how much it is after taxes. Kids who are tribal members get a third of that amount. Don't you get it? Jamie sounds confused. I'm not enrolled. My dad's not listed on my birth certificate, one of many decisions that my Fontaine grandparents made because my mom was only 16 when she had me. Jamie must have heard the shift in my tone because he pauses and asks, Are you okay talking about this, Donis? Yes, I say, realizing my ease at sharing about myself. Maybe not everything, though. I'm not ready to admit how angry I feel over their decision that affected my tribal enrollment. It's hard when being native means different things depending on who's asking and why, he says. And to some people, you'll never be native enough, I add. Yeah, it's your identity, but it gets defined or controlled by other people. His words mirror my exact thoughts. What Grand Mary and Grandpa Lorenzo took from me when they meant to exclude my dad. Jamie meets my eyes, and I know that we see each other. We're both silent for the rest of the run. There's a steady breeze off the river and not a cloud in the sky. The cool air feels wonderful and tingly on my arms and legs. My breathing is deep and steady. I feel so good. As if the rays of sunshine aren't landing on me, but coming from inside me. Jamie looks over, and I smile back. Then it happens. The zone. My body feels strong, as if I could run like this forever. I'm both in my body and somewhere else. I'm whole. Running is where all the different parts of me fit together perfectly, like a jigsaw puzzle. The zone is where I'm a step removed from the puzzle, so the lines fade and I can see myself clearly. By the time we reach Evercare, we're both panting. Jamie usually gives a thumbs up and jogs the rest of the way home. Today he doesn't make any move, just stands next to me, running his hands through his wet hair, leaving waves from his temples to the back of his neck. "Would you like to meet my grandmother?" I ask impulsively. "Yes," he says, looking surprised but pleased. "I'd like that very much." We pass the front desk, both easing into regular breaths. I feel nervous as we walk into my grandmother's room. I'm not sure why I've decided to invite Jamie along. Not even Lily has been here to see Grandmary. "Grandmary, this is my friend Jamie," I say after kissing her cheek. Light bulb off.
"Bonjour, madame. C'est un plaisir de vous rencontrer."
Jamie kisses her hand, where raised blue veins thread beneath wrinkled skin. He looks across Grandmary's bed to me. I do a double take. For as much time as I've spent this week with Jamie, I still know so little about him. He spoke French at the party last Saturday, and now again to my grandmother. The line between hockey world and regular world isn't blurred. It's been rendered non-existent by the new guy on my brother's hockey team. Dangerously non-existent. "Who are you, Jamie Johnson?" I ask, perplexed. He looks down, as if embarrassed or uncomfortable. When he meets my eyes, there's something determined in his expression. He speaks French again, this time to me.
"Je suis celui qui attend avec impatience demain."
I am the one looking forward to tomorrow.